हरि ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविरविषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 39. Sutra 115. Ikshater na shabdam. Brahman is not inexpressible because scriptural statements to the contrary are seen in the Upanishads. The word ashabdam means that which cannot be expressed by words. Brahman is not of that nature, na. Rather, it is expressible by words. Why? Because it is seen, ikshate, in the Upanishads. It is said, tatva aupanishadam purusham prichami. I ask about the Lord who is described in the Upanishads, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The Lord in question is seen to be described in the Upanishads. The form ikshate from ikshati instead of iksha, with a passive meaning being seen, is poetic license. Footnote 30. The word ikshate is bhava, passive, and is formed by adding the affix tip pratyaya. The unusual usage here is arsha, a certain degree of grammatical liberty allowed to an exalted author. Right? Because when you're working with poetry, then you can do all kinds of things, right? They turn things around, they put things in the wrong order and all that. Because the point is that what is the meaning of it, right? Because when you're dealing with poetry, then it's trying to express something. And so you try to catch what is being expressed. You don't worry about how it's done. But you're saying it in a very nice way. Right? So it sounds very nice. So ikshater na shabdam then sounds very nice. Right? But it means this, that the Lord can be understood through words. Right? Or can be described. Let's say not understood. He can be described through words. Because their point is you can't describe the unlimited absolute truth through words. But here it said, no, you can describe understanding him. Having realization, now that's another thing. But you can hear about the Lord in words. That's the whole point. Then by serving under authority, then you can realize. Right? Does that make sense? So through devotional service you can realize, but you can already hear about. Otherwise how do you focus? Right? If the Lord is unknowable and undescribable by words, how do you even know of his existence, how he is as a goal, what is the process, your relationship, how can you know any of that? If you don't know that, how can you adjust the mental state to that of devotion? Does that make sense? So that means you have to be able to hear about the Lord. Right? And the point is the Lord is non-different from his names and from his glories. Right? Material things are different. That's why you can gain satisfaction from hearing about the Lord, because the Lord and the words are non-different. He is the words, the potency of the words. In other words, words have potency because of the Lord. You know, so let alone, so that means there's the direct and indirect. So there's the internal potency will reveal himself, and the external potency will reveal, you know, what we think of as the material world. Does this make sense? So it's because we can hear about the Lord, right? Because we're taking it, you know, for granted. Yes, you hear, chant, you know, about the Lord, glorify the Lord, you know, in the association of devotees. We just take it, of course. Now let's move on to something, you know, that I learned that when I first joined. So now let's move on to something more advanced. No, that is the advanced. That's the mastery, is that the advanced is given in the beginning, right? Then once you understand what you're supposed to look for, then we apply technique. Right? You understand? Because technique is not going to get you realization of the Lord. It's the devotion that will. So by hearing about the Lord, devotion is invoked. Then we are able to apply technique. Otherwise, why apply technique unless there's some interest? Right? Thinking, feeling, willing, then there's action. Right? So unless there is some desire, some need, there is no action. Does that make sense? Yeah. So now here's the technical point behind it on how it's functioning. Right? So this is what establishes that hearing and chanting about the Lord actually is an effective process. We're just taking it for granted. But actually, those who are intelligent, they will say, well, if the Supreme is absolute and beyond the material creation, how can words of this creation, right? This question is asked by, who was it? Who asked it? It was a discussion between Sanat Kumar and I'm not sure who else. Like that. I think it's yeah, personified Vedas. Like that. I don't remember who was having the discussion, but I think Sanat Kumar was the one who was speaking. And this was being related by someone else to someone, I mean by Sukadev to Parikit, but it was about Sanat Kumar and someone else. Like that. So the question is how is it that the Supreme Absolute, who is beyond the material, can be understood by material worlds? Because you're vibrating the tongue, which is material. It's and by that vibration, that travels through the air and ether, which are material. That then is heard by the ear, which is made out of material elements. You know, digested by the brain and all this kind of thing like that. And so, where's the spiritual part here? Right, so he explains that it's because of the chit potency, right? Because of the internal potency that's there in the words, right? If you hear, that's why it says if you hear in parampara, it's not just hearing words; it's hearing words in parampara. They have that chit potency, therefore they have effect, right? If we think that no, it's because of the words I'm using, that's why someone is understanding or becoming a devotee, we've missed the point. No, it's because of the chit potency. All it is that we're giving an opportunity for someone to hear about that, and so that they'll actually, in a relaxed way, hear and be open to the effect of the chit potency. That's why you choose particular words and all that. But it's not that the words you chose and the situation you chose, that's what made them a devotee. That's gross. That's materialistic. Then we're thinking, I'm the controller and enjoy it. But where does the potency of the words in the first place to even convey any kind of meaning at all coming from? That's still coming from the Lord. But if it's mundane, then it's empowered with the external potency. And if it's about the Lord, coming from bona fides, then it has the internal potency. So in other words, words are a bona fide source, bona fide medium for the potency of the Lord to be manifest so that there is ability to communicate between one living entity and another. Right? Does that make sense? So, you can describe like that because the Lord's potency is there. But, the point is if you want to realize the Absolute, that's only if there's going to be proper association, that aspect of devotion, that faith. Then we'll actually understand and realize. Does this make sense? Yes.
It is said that chit potency should be there in the words.
Yes.
What about the intent of the speaker? If the intent is not correct, will it block the chit potency as such?
We have to see. If the person is sincere who is hearing, they'll get the benefit. But the person who's speaking may get less or benefit. See, because the Lord's independent. So he's not depending upon us. Otherwise, then we're saying, okay, if the person is chanting, but is not chanting purely, then the name is not, Krishna himself cannot be pure. You understand? Because if it was a matter of that, so if what we're chanting is the impure name, what's the offense? You understand? The offense is because it is Krishna, and therefore we're not dealing properly. Right? So because we put too much on ourselves, I'm doing this, I'm chanting, so the name gives the name the potency. I'm preaching, that's why it's working. Rather than, no, this is all the Lord. It's the Lord is making all this happen. We're just an instrument. That's the meaning of the instrumental case. It is only an instrument. It's not doing the activity. Right? The subject is actually performing the action. We're only involved in the action. Right? But since the action is being performed by the subject, it means it has to be according to the action that the subject is interested in. Right? But for it to be effective, it has to be according to the needs of the object. Otherwise, how it will be received, how there'll be interaction. Right? So that means we have to be both aware of the subject and the object. Right? You know, does that make sense? Like that. Without that, we're not doing it. So the subject's performing it, it's being received by the object. So that's our position. We can be instrumental. So does that make sense? Yeah. So if somebody's interested in Krishna consciousness, Super Soul puts them in contact with the devotees, then they will get benefit. You know what I'm saying? So you can look at it, okay, someone's more sincere, they come in contact with someone who has more potency. They're less sincere, they come in contact with somebody with less potency. But it's not necessarily that's how it would work. You know what I'm saying? You can have that aspect, but it's not that the person is the one is the problem. It's a matter of what is their intent. Because you have new bhaktas who make devotees. And nowadays, it's, you know, only really senior, experienced, mature devotees are making devotees. But before, it was new bhaktas made devotees. They were uninitiated, been around a few days, a few weeks, and they were making devotees. You understand? Simply because that sincerity is there, so the chit potency can flow. They don't know what it is. They don't know what's going on. They simply have an interest in it, but because that interest is sincere, therefore the potency is there. So it's not skills, it's not these other things. Now you may add that on top of it, but it's not the skills that make it work. It's actually the attitude. So the attitude is good. Then it's...
Brahman is expressible by words because it has been seen, ikshate. So it has been seen by the pure devotees as we heard in Narad Muni, Lord. So they see the Lord and therefore they are able to express in words and therefore we are able to understand. Is it
yes, true? Yes, because we take this from, means they have seen, so they are giving to us. And so they have potency. What? Because they have seen means what? They have seen from in the parampara. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
When it manifests, if someone is not in the Guru Parampara,
why would it?
They just start talking and circulating about God.
So then that's just words that have the mundane potency. Rabindra Sarup would talk about there in Boston, you'd have these PhDs and that who would be sitting down at the pub drinking their beer discussing Jiva Goswami's Sundarbas and what does he mean by this word and that word and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So the point is you have intellectual, it's very intellectual because when Prabhupada says that he's the greatest scholar in the modern age, he's not just saying that because he's in our line. He actually is. You know, we understand that or not, but Shris, who are, you know, they're, you know, an established, you know, line, great scholars in there, and that, and they acknowledge that. So many people read Jiva Goswami just because of how erudite the Sanskrit is. You know, so like an academic likes to read something that's really intelligent and very clever and so well, you know, constructed. So even people of other sampradayas, they like to read because of this. Does that make sense? So, therefore, if someone has that ability to appreciate that, then they'll like to discuss it. But the whole point is they're just discussing it because of the intellectual prowess that's there. And so then they don't appreciate actually the content of what he's doing. They just like to argue over the words. That's the point. You hear the holy name from sahajiyas, then what do you get? You get materialism. Because their whole point is their prestige and fame and how much everybody will appreciate and like that. It's not about devotion, so that's what you'll get. You understand? It carries potency, but if someone's not interested, do they catch it? Prabhupada's given us a nice process. How many devotees don't catch it and think, no, we have to live like Westerners? So not catching what the acharyas give, that's a common disease. Right? And let alone a materialist who's, you know, dedicated to, you know, mundane, you know, how you say, intellectualism. You understand? The fact that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be described in words is expressed by Sarve Veda Yat Param Amananti. All the Vedas describe the Lord's feet. Katha Upanishad 2:15. The Lord is called Ashabdam, or inexpressible by words, because he cannot be completely described by words. Just as Meru is called invisible because it cannot be completely seen. If this explanation is not accepted, statements like Yad Vachana Bhutitam, Bhutitam, Tad Eva Brahma Tad Vidhi, no Brahman to be that which cannot be expressed by words, would be meaningless, for Brahman could not be known at all if not describable a little by words. Right? So there has to be enough that gives an indication that you can understand that there is something beyond, something supreme, something great. But the depth of that, all that, the words may not be able to carry. Right? But the potency that's imbued in them, that can carry. But that will only be appreciated by devotion. We apply devotion, we will understand. We don't apply devotion, we will not understand. Right? So, therefore, if they're hearing from a bona fide source, but they don't apply it in devotion, they won't get the devotional benefit. But if there's some sincerity, then they could get benefit. Does that make sense?
Maharaj.
Yes.
Can you please explain expressive capacities of words, like in terms of vrittis or mukhya and gauna, from prayers of Prasanatha Vedas?
It means the specifics I'm not at this point aware of.
The vrittis are expressive capacities of words, like mukhya and
gauna. Okay, that means, okay.
Mukhya and gauna.
So the point is the word, at least in Sanskrit and others, then it's just common usage. But in Sanskrit, there's a root for a word.
What was right? The question?
The question is basically, how do words work? How can they express? Mm-hmm. Like that. So the root then actually has a meaning. So generally, as we said, most are from verbs, because nouns are what can manifest action, as we mentioned. Right? You have a particular action, it can do that. A pot can cook. So therefore, cooking is first, then the pot is manifest to do the cooking. Right? So the action is what's the first thing. Right? Then nouns are the environment and instruments with which it can be done. So actually, the central feature in language is the verb.
Right.
Yes, the activity, or at least the existence. Like you say, Krishna is swimming, right? So the standard thing, we'd think swimming is the verb, but no, is the verb. So Krishna is existing in the state of swimming, Because is anything being accomplished by the swimming? You say Krishna is swimming to the other side of the Jamuna. Now swimming is the verb, because he's going from this bank to that bank. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the root then has a specific meaning. So in Sanskrit, the actual meanings of the words, what they carry, is easier because there's actually a science to it. Then the grammar is then how these different forms of the words relate to each other so that they can express the 24 parts of speech. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's a medium, but still it's about the understanding and the intent, you know, the skill of the individual, how well they can use language as a tool. Right? It's like that with anything. You have pots, you have pans, you have spoons, you have the fire, like that. But depending upon someone's understanding, their experience, their ability, what's their intent, then they can do something with it. So it's just another medium. So how to communicate, then this is your main medium, is through the words. Then backing that up, you have all the abhinaya and all the you know, the expressions, the mudras, the different physical and, you know, hand and physical, how you say, movements. All these things are to back it up. Does that make sense?
Like the language is developed from the needs for communication, the communication from needs for relationships.
Yes, you could say. But they go together, but it's not created by the modern. It means Krishna wants to communicate with the devotees. Therefore, then this is how it does. You know, it's just that when the Lord wants to speak, therefore then the tongue comes into play. So there's already is the these external forms are coming from a finer source, right? The need to speak or to hear. You know, then that's the original. Then you have ears, you have tongues. Does that make sense? So that's how the manifestation comes here. So because Krishna is wanting to expand the happiness that is there, then he expands his energy so that you can have relationships, so you can interact. So then communication is going to be a main thing. So you see, in the pastimes, they talk so much. And even you see, and you go into older literature, then so much is being said. You know, like in the, what do you call it? You know, the Iliad, you know, it's like they're there, the two different persons are going to fight. So many things are being said. You know, so you see this is a very common thing up to quite recently. There'll be a lot more talking, a lot more expression, a lot more interaction because of the relationship. Nowadays, it's just a skill, get something done, so who wants to talk?
Okay, Vedas, even sciences expressed in conversations.
Yes, yes. Yes, yeah, it should be written on the board in math. But the point is that may be the technical point, but all that, what is it for, that they don't know. So we discuss what it's for. Just like, let's say, okay, we have a car, okay? Now, there is some super intellectual people, they got, you know, IQs of, you know, 180 plus, and they're sitting there discussing all the technical points of the car and the rubber and how much, you know, surface is touching the ground and the makeup of the rubber that's there, so therefore have the grip and all that, and then how that applies and the different road surfaces. And they're just going on and on and on about, you know, all these things. Anything you want to bring up about the car, they can, huge calculations of the whole thing. But they have no idea how to drive and don't even know that driving is what the car does.
No experience.
No experience. So that's the whole point. So you could say, "Is no, but they're so scholarly. Look at them. They can write all this stuff on the board. What can we do?" Right? Devotees, they just talk philosophy. You know, where's the big thing? You have all these karmis. They're doing such amazing mechanical points. But they have no idea what it's for. And then we're accepting that as more intelligent than the person who actually knows how to drive. Right? So that means Even, you know, the simplest person, the old grandmother who only drives a car to church on Sunday, actually knows more than those scientists about a car. Then you go from there up to, you know, the Formula One racer. So that's the point, is that the new bhakta who just has shraddha knows more than a PhD, you know, a Nobel laureate in science. That's the thing, is that it makes it sound, because of those who don't know, right? You know, there's a Bengali saying, in a village of blind men, then a man with one eye is king. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is where the whole world's blind, then someone who can play with that blindness, oh, he's so much better. But we're talking about light. And so, yes, new devotees are on the, you know, lower end of those who understand the light. But they're higher than the most expert in the field of dark. You understand? You have a whole stadium of darkness, pitch blackness. So one candle is more powerful than the whole stadium. That's the thing, is so when we start to judge by the modern karmi things, we will be distracted. Maya will catch us. As soon as we think they're better at this. They may know technique. Okay, we can learn technique, but you're adding technique to already something else, to the higher principle. But we're making it sound like, no, it's that technique that makes the whole thing work. You know, you know what it is. You know how that works. Then you add science, and you can apply it very nicely. Does that make sense? So this is the point, is that the communication to be able to express something based on the values of relationship, that's actually the point of communication. And all the other things are just to support that. So if no one talks on that principle of relationship, doesn't mean that that's not what language is for. If they only use it for economic and social development, hey, they can do that. But that's in support of Dharma, right? Which is in support of Mukti, which is in support of Bhakti. If they don't catch that, it doesn't mean that that's not what language is for. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like kids take things from around the house and play with them in ways that have nothing to do with that item is for. You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't know the purpose.
They don't know the purpose. But you could say is, oh, they're very expert at playing. You know. So that's the whole thing. So amongst children, they'll think they're very clever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like what is it? I saw this one poster in one devotee's house, and I think it was concerning the, how you say, growing up with their children from, you know, how you say, childhood into, how you say, the adolescence and youth. You know, this is just giving the gist of it. I don't remember exactly, but it's that it's addressing the teenager, that while they know everything, they should go out in the world and become successful before they grow up into an adult and become stupid. You know what I'm saying? Because the teenager thinks they know everything. And the adults, what do they know? So that's the modern materialist. He's like these teenagers. They think they know everything. They're so impressed and amazed by the material energy and playing with it. The skills. Like that. But the actual, what it's for, and using it in a mature way, that they wouldn't have a clue. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea that we're trying to get across, is that the language is a tool for expressing relationship between the living entities and the Lord. It's another form of, you know, the devotion, expression of devotion. it's reflected here so that people can use it in their relationships and use it to know the Lord. But if they only use it for, you know, basic things of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then, you know, that's their loss. You know, does that make sense?
Maharaj, can we say that Nama, Rupa, Guna, and Lila, when they manifest in material world, that they are connected with senses, mind, and intelligence?
And how? What are you putting as intelligence?
The shape, the form.
And then the mind?
Qualities.
And the pastimes?
Activities or words. The name can be just like...
You could, but when you get to the transcendental platform, there's no difference. It's just that we're able to recognize through these levels. But it's those on those upper levels, it's not that they see pastimes, but there's no forms. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a feeling, you know. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's just that a name you can catch first, because everybody can hear the name. Then with time, that will bring about appreciation of the form of the Lord. Right? Then from that, the qualities of the Lord, and then those qualities being manifest as his pastimes. Right, and then there's that. That's the main, but it also includes one of the pastimes, the associates, the dham, the paraphernalia, because we may like the pastimes but not the associates, you know, or we appreciate the pastimes and not the place, you know, or the paraphernalia. Like, how many times have you seen puja paraphernalia tossed into the sink? Not gently placed, just tossed. So that means because they don't understand paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. So, that's
it. How do we? I agree with everything you say.
Okay.
No, but.
You know, if you say like a new bhakta is superior, or at least he has a glimmer of light, he's a candle in a dark stadium.
Yes,
so
yes.
He's superior to all the great scholars of his world.
Yes.
The question I ask is, it's true, but how do we say it in such a way we don't sound arrogant?
But on one sense, what does it matter? Because the karmis, they don't mind being arrogant. You know, in fact, nowadays, being a little arrogant is considered the, you know, okay, yeah, this guy's okay. You know. The point is because it's not us. That was the previous point, Mataji's point about being instrument. So we're an instrument, so we're not actually the one doing. See, the karmi thinks he is the doer, he is the scholar. Well, we're just a medium for this knowledge, for the devotion, for that. So we're just trying to present that. So in that way, then, we're humble. You know, it's like when Prabhupada was in Sweden and he was giving that famous lecture on you know, the Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra as first class man, second class man, third class man, fourth class man. Right? He was in Sweden. They're probably the most sensitive in the world to designating people. They just don't do it as their own culture. So it's not even so much that it's just the modern thing, it's just the way they think. You don't bother anybody, you don't say anything, you will do nothing to disturb the neighbors. I remember one Swedish devotee explaining that when, you know, as kids, they'd be out playing in the yard and they'd be yelling and screaming. And their father would come out and say, "Don't yell so loud, you disturb the neighbors." The closest neighbor is 1 kilometer away. That's the Swedish perfection. You know, you can get by at 0.5 kilometer, but that's pushing it. But 1 kilometer between houses, that's like Swedish heaven. You know, that's just standard. It can't be anything less than that. So they're, you know, so worried that 1 kilometer away that maybe they might disturb the neighbors. You know? You know, it's like, you know, quite, you could say quite different from, you know, certain American, you know, attitudes on this. It's like, who cares? You know, it's like, you know. So, they're, there, and Prabhupada could have said, you know, the intellectual, you know, those who do intellectual activities, those who do so the cooperation between them, he could have used all that. But instead, he said first class man, second class man, third class man, fourth class man, and used that the whole time, right? Just to poke, because they think they're so smart, they're so special. And so from that, then they'll ask questions, they'll think, they'll do all these things. And so at the end, then someone asked Prabhupada, you know, when it came for questions, so what class man are you? Because they expect him to say, well, I'm first class, of course. You know, so I'm telling you all this. He said, I'm fifth. I'm the servant of the other four. And immediately everybody accepted. It was just the whole thing went very nice. No riots, no anything. Otherwise, that could have easily turned into, you know, a standard campus riot there. You know, so it's all in this aspect of if we see ourselves as the servant. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the mood he was taking, it was very bold, but it's not that we know or we're doing. We're simply, this is the words of Lord Chaitanya and the Acharyas, you know, so... And you'll get benefit by that, so they would very boldly go out and express it, but they wouldn't let themselves, it's not that I'm the one doing this. So if you do that, it has that potency, and it won't disturb. You know, it's just like a little kid who's very bold. You know, you're there in the airport sitting there, and this kid walks up to you, never seen him before. Hi, what? My name's this, what's your name? You know, it's like that. It's just one of those things you just don't do in the airport, right? You know, but he comes up and does it. Do you mind? Not at all. Right? Because it has that boldness, but it doesn't have any how you say?
Provocation.
Yeah.
Provocation.
Provocation. It's not that they're trying to get something done. It's just, you know, relationship. You know, I'm here, you're here. Hey, what's going on?
Who knows?
Huh?
Who knows?
Yeah.
It may be. There's some provocation.
That's another thing. We're talking about a little kid. You know, it's like that. Yeah, he planned it all along. And so when he goes to the airport just to harass people, sits there and thinks, ah, that is the guy. Yeah. So that's the whole point. That's why attitude. That's why Prabhupada then starts in the Gita, in the introduction, the explanation of all the aspects of success starts with attitude. If you have the right attitude, then everything else can work. Because then you're open to what is the goal, what is the process, you know, what is the knowledge and the process, how to combine all that to get results, what is the real results. But if the attitude's not right, then you can't get that. That's the whole point. So that was before. So Mati was asking about the scholars. Now, if their attitude is they're impressed by Jiva Goswami, so what's he really saying, then they may get, if it's coming in, you know, a proper translation. Like that. But otherwise, if not, then if it's with attitude, then it's just, you know, showing off their, you know, scholarliness to the other person. But in other words, Jiva's Goswami's is so great, but they're trying to show off how great they are to their friends also. You know, so it's just it's a matter of that. That's why intent is so important. Now we put so much emphasis on the skill and the delivery, but what's the intent of that? So if I present something so nicely, but my intent is actually political, or I get some benefit from it, so then how is it so much better than the new bhakta who's a bit insensitive to his environment just because he doesn't have experience, and so he deals, you know, not necessarily in the right way, but, you know, he's at least trying to be Krishna conscious. And then someone else who their social status is more important than Krishna conscious, but they present everything very nicely and ruffle no feathers. How is that actually better, you know, in the long run? It may be in the immediate it appears to be, but in the long run, that other person will, because of their sincerity, develop the experience, while the person who's just has the political motive, they'll get stuck there. You know, that's the, how you say, I think it was one class Bhavananda gave, he was talking about the big devotee, you know. Then, you know, and this is back in the day of the big devotees. And so then he was saying, you can be the big devotee, you know, but at the time of death, all the little devotees, you know, they'll go back to Godhead, and you'll have to take birth again so you can be the big devotee again. You know, so he's pointing out it's not necessarily advantageous in Krishna consciousness. Yes.
So when our boldness turns into arrogance, sort of like the light goes out, then yeah.
Yes, basically. Means you're doing something, it is in Krishna consciousness, so that the effect can be there, but you may not see the effect mm-hmm. because of your arrogance. But it's not that it may have effect because of people there may be sincere. Right?
Right.
Like that. So they may get some benefit, and then they'll come in contact with someone else who can give, you know, take them further. Does that make sense? You know, so you've done so much like this and getting nowhere and all that, and then someone else comes along and then everything starts happening. So, like that. So the intent is very important. So, yeah. The Lord is known by the Vedas, but the Vedas are His very self. Thus, this does not contradict the self-revealing nature of the Lord. That the Vedas are His self will be explained later. The conclusion is that Brahman is expressible by words. Right? So the Veda is the Lord, so therefore that's why the Vedas can express the Lord, because they are the Lord. But the point is that you'll only understand and realize the Lord by that devotion in following those words of the Veda. Right? Because only if you deal with the Lord in devotion does He reveal Himself. If you deal with the Lord in a mechanical way, then you only get the mechanical result. Right? The materialists are dealing with the Lord on a material platform. They only get material results. Devotees deal with the Lord on the devotional platform. They get devotional results. Jiva Goswami's Chatushruti Tika. The next sutra is Ikshatera Na Shabdam. Because it is said that the Supreme glanced on the material nature, it is not said by the scriptures that Pradhan, the unmanifest state of matter, is the cause of the material world. This sutra is explained by the word Abhigya in Srimad Bhagavatam 111. The sutra.
There's a footnote there.
Oh, it is a footnote. Okay. In his Bhagavatam commentary, Srila Sridhar Swami gives the same explanation to the sutra. Then is the Pradhan the intended object of meditation, since it is the cause of the universe? No. The verse said, He, the object of meditation, is the one who is Abhigya. And this is because of the rule, Ikshatera Na Shabdam. Right. So Sridhar Swami is then quoting from Vedanta Sutra in his commentary on the first verse of Bhagavatam. So Jiva Goswami is then taking that point and expanding on it. Right. So everything means that the Pradhan is manifesting things, but it's not the Pradhan that's the point of focus. It's upon the Lord who's glanced upon Pradhan. Right. That's the real point. Because otherwise, we see the material energy, the manifestation, so is that the topic? No, it's the Lord. And so, is it through that we can understand? It's only that the Lord is manifesting through that. It's His potency. That's why you can understand. Yes?
So what's the relationship to Ikshatera Na Shabdam? Is whatever is said about Pradhan? And the object of meditation? Shouldn't be
Janmarjaya Sayadana. No, I say Abhigya. What does the word Abhigya mean? That's what it's
all-knowing.
All-knowing. Because He's all-knowing, so you can know the all-knowing through His process. Right? Means, why are we independent? Because He's independent. But we're small independent, He's big independent. So when you bring our independence in line with His independence, then it becomes perfect. So our all-knowing, when we bring it in line with Krishna's all-knowing, then it actually becomes perfect. Does that make sense? See, the question is that He's glanced on Pradhan. Okay, the Pradhan is there, but the Pradhan is different from the Lord, so how can, through the material energy, you know the Lord who is beyond the material energy? You understand? So The point is that, no, it's because he's glanced, he's put it into motion, so that all the forms that you see, that's because of his glance. It's his potency. Right? It's not separate from that.
So that's why he could be expressed through words as well, because he puts the potency, that's the connection?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But the point is he's given the potency to the words, and at the same time, so that they can convey things, so you can understand what's happening in the world, right? He's glanced, it has that potency. Therefore, the things of this nature, you can understand things of this nature, right? But the doubt is that, okay, that's of this nature, but what about of that nature? So things of this can't understand that. Does that make sense? So, but the point is that because that has glanced on this, that's why this works. Right? So if we're seeing this in relation with that, then we can understand that. Does that make sense? So in other words, according to the Upanishad's definition, this means the material world, that means Brahman. Right?
So. Personally, it says that we cannot describe Brahman by words.
Yes.
Personally, it's also said that we cannot describe, but we use this as a tool to glorify him and to have a relationship with him.
The point is they say you can't, it's like, they're saying the words can't describe him, but can the words describe that you can't describe him? How are we saying you can't describe Brahman? Why is it that when they say the word Brahman, we know what they're talking about? Because the word describes Brahman. You know, because if the word could describe Brahman, why are they even trying? That's the whole point, is that it's just a waste of time. It's just word jugglery. That's all they're doing. They're playing around. Because they're, you know, how you say, you know, willing to come into the, you know, the atheistic approach, how they'll be the controller and enjoyer. They want to keep that, but they're willing to follow the directions of the scripture to get it, as opposed to the Buddhists who don't. You know, so you can say in one sense they're a step better, but they're still just word jugglery. You know, it's just still about themselves. You know, their experience, the Brahmananda, it's about them experiencing Brahman. Is it, what about Brahman? You know, if Brahman's already experiencing Ananda, then Brahman doesn't need us to merge back into Brahman to experience Ananda. You know, so that it's our connection with Brahman where the Ananda is coming from. So saying that we are Brahman that they're talking about, then we should already be happy. We're not doing it because we're thinking we're separate. But that means then the how you say, how could Brahman be separated since he's non-dual? You know what I'm saying? That just from every aspect, their philosophy doesn't hold. But it sounds good to the mind. That's the whole point, is that if the mind is the prominent feature, then saying something that doesn't make sense makes sense. So basically, only Vaishnavas can actually work on the platform of real intelligence. The Karmis, the Jnanis, they can't. They'll always be based on mental speculation. And they use the intelligence to advantage. So those that can use the intelligence, they'll consider themselves more superior than those who can't. But the point is it's still about the mind. So it's not until they use intelligence to actually discern things based on the perspective of the Lord, right? That's the actual objective. Then you can see things actually with intelligence. Otherwise, you're using intelligence, but to support the mind. So that's why things that don't make sense make sense. You know. So scientists, you know, intellectuals, common person, they use their analytical ability within the context of their identity, and things that are outside their identity, then they don't acknowledge, even though it would be logical. And there's things within their identity that don't make sense, but they accept it. You understand? So that's the subjective position. Objective is when you take the Lord's opinion. Right? So the Lord's opinion as it comes down through parampara, that's objective. So that's the mode of ignorance. It makes it look like devotees are sentimentalists and these practical people in the world, the professionals, the intellectuals, they're the guys that really know what's going on. But that's the mode of ignorance. It's actually the opposite. You know? They make so much money, this and that, they have so much power, but they're not satisfied. Why? Because they don't know the soul. We know the soul. Right? So, therefore, the literatures that can give you knowledge of the soul, which is higher, why wouldn't they be able to give you just the mechanics, how the material world works? And the Western knowledge that it has so much technical knowledge, but it can't tell you what's there, then actually how stable and sustainable is their mechanical knowledge? You know what I'm saying? You know, they come up with the car. Okay, great. And now they just figured out that, you know, the car and exhaust and making it and dumping it's going to create a lot of problem. But economically, it's quite viable. Like that, you know. Does that make sense? So it's just like this. Okay, let's say you buy a nice pot for cooking. How long do you keep the pot?
Until you can clean it.
Okay.
Nice.
So, but yeah. So, saying it could, depending on how you take care of it, it could last a whole lifetime, right? Mm-hmm. So, what would you think if the modern advertisements every year they come out with a new design of pot and a new this and that, and you got to get the latest pot, and so now the whole thing is everyone's selling their pots, and the whole thing you go down to the secondhand pot, you know, salesman, you know, with the little gold stars in his teeth, and you know. You know, take that pot, you know, yeah, give it a bang, yeah, see how good it is, you know, that kind of stuff. So then wouldn't we consider that's just real materialistic? He says it's unnecessary. So why is it like that with clothes? Why is it like that with cars? Why is it like that with everything else? It works. Why do you need to change it? You know what I'm saying? You put on your pants, it works. Why do you need to change it?
Economic development.
Yeah, so it's just economic development. So the point is that these features, that's the main thing. It's all about economics. So how can they actually be talk about ideals? Now they're trying to keep these things without disturbing. Right? In other words, how much do you hear about, how you say global warming nowadays? Do people talk about it that much? No. Is it gone away? There's more cars. You know what I'm saying? Or I don't know if you remember when mobile phones first came out, there's this whole thing about how the radio waves and this, and, you know, roast your brain and this, and, you know, all that was a huge thing like that. Do you hear about it anymore? No. So it's like, it's economics is supreme. So when people talk about being nice, be good, be this, it's as long as economics go on. But if they get in the way of economics, same guys will say, oh, we have to consider everybody and all that, and then something happened, they just did it like that. Why did you do that? Oh, we were just being practical, you know, because otherwise it would have taken more time and more money, and then everybody's just supposed to go, oh, yeah, of course. But if someone else does, oh, they don't consider the people, they don't this and that, they're just... You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is it's not consistent, it's not sustainable. So they have to constantly be changing. Like that. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So they can't give the higher and their technicality, which is, you know, very advanced in one sense, but it's constantly has to be changing because it's unstable. So then you have another, you know, set that, how you say, basis of knowledge that can give what's actually the purpose of what's beyond. And then So that means they can deal with the eternal. That means they can also deal with how you function with material energy on a sustainable level. Varnashram is sustainable. Right? God consciousness is sustainable. But modern economics and social things that aren't sustainable. Those things that are considered, you know, old. Those are conservative values and things like that. You understand?
No satisfaction coming from self.
From, no. So basically what it just means is, because it's always changing, those who consider themselves liberal, they're becoming the new conservatives. And those are the conservatives, they're the ones that are more dynamic in that than, you know, moving the other direction. It's just the way it has to work. Right? Because people have to be able to sustain. Does that make sense? So it's not to have faith in it's not very useful. To engage it, that's fine. But that's engaging it based on the higher principles. You know, the higher principles, you can use the lower principles. Does that make sense? You know, so if you know the higher, you can get by with the lower. Like I said, someone who doesn't know cooking, you know, you hand them four bricks and a tin can, they'll have a real problem cooking. But you give that to someone who's expert at cooking, it'll get by. It's not ideal, but it'll work. Right? I remember out camping, you cook the pancakes, but of course, you know, boys going out camping, do they remember everything? No. So did they bring the spatula? No. So how do you flip the pancake? You know, you cook it until it's done on the one side and you're ready. Then you take it and with a flip of your wrist, you bang it against a rock or a piece of wood. So it just slides the pancake over and then you flip it. You know. And because it works, then they never bring the spatula again. You know, it's just one less thing to worry about. You know? It's just hopefully they bring the pan.
Just bang it against the wall.
Yeah.
Useless spatulas.
Yeah, what do you need them for? You can just bang it on the wall. Is that?
Yeah. So yes. In this connection, Vyavasayagnika Guhya would be the only pure manifestation of intelligence, and everything else would be insecure.
I heard kind of Vyavasayatmika, and that's the only manifestation of intelligence.
Vyavasayatmika Buddha would be the only pure manifestation of intelligence, and everything else would be in support of it.
Yes, if you're taking Vyavasayatmika, meaning that focused on the Supreme as given by the Acharyas in the Parampara, that would be yes. But when you speculate and try to use other things, then there'll be a problem. So as we see here, it goes back and forth. So what's the consistent? The consistent is that the living entity being absorbed in some way of hearing, chanting, remembering the Lord, that's always consistent. That's always there. Now, engaging, expressing that through one situation, the material energy, that's where it will have, sometimes we're talking about how that's come be done very nicely and how that's useless. You know, so we go from saying Priyavrata to, you know, the story, you know, to Rahugana. You know, just the living entity goes out in the forest and, you know, it's just, life's miserable, it's terrible. There's nothing good about it in that analogy. Right? Does that make sense? You know, just like basically with Pujinabarhi shot, with Paranjana, there's nothing good. But at the same time, is then you have Priyavrata, where everything he's engaging, even things that seemingly are karma, you know, are karma conduct. He's seeing it in relationship with the Lord, because the Lord being the Veda, everything is him. So he can see like that. Right? So when you see everything in connection with the Lord, that's Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. If you get distracted by the material energy, then that is then what it talks about, that you have, you know, thousands of different desires and ways of looking at it. So you see it in relationship to Krishna, it's perfect. Perfect means it's situated on the transcendental platform, that it's doing that. It doesn't mean it's devotion. It's not that your table becomes devotion. Right? It becomes perfect because it's engaged in transcendence. You understand? But devotion is the actual point of perfection. In other words, there's perfection, then there's what's beyond perfection. Beyond perfection, that's prema. But perfection means at least it's not material. Does that make sense? Yeah. So how you use the material energy, that's going to be seen by your focus. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
On the subject matter about how the Lord can be known by words,
yes,
and, you know, with the instruments like the ear and
right,
expressed by the tongue.
Right, right.
I once heard a very nice, simple explanation of it, and I want to know, get your reaction.
Okay.
That the Lord is very good at packaging. You know, if you look at a watermelon. A watermelon is, you know, the way you know, you look at a
yes,
orange. So the Lord is very good at packaging. So he can package himself.
Okay.
He packages himself in a 16-word mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare and then he packages himself in the words of the scripture.
Right.
So that we can handle him.
Yes.
And so it's a nice, I found it a nice analogy.
Yeah, that's nice. That's good. Yeah. That just is, but depending upon our devotion and commitment to it, then how much we can understand through that packaging.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
How much we want to unwrap the package.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah. Okay. Okay. The sutra is explained by the word abhigya. In Srimad Bhagavatam 111, the sutra is also explained by many passages in the scriptures. In the Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1, it is said, Sad eva som yedam agra asit ekam ekad dvitiyam brahma. O gentle one, in the beginning only the Supreme existed. There was none but Him. In the Upanishads it is also said, Tad aikshata bahushyam. The Supreme thought, let me become many. In the Upanishads, it is again said, Tad Tejo Sarajata Ityadi. The Supreme created the element fire and the other material elements. Here someone may protest. Is it not said that the Pradhan, unmanifested material nature, is the creator of the material world? To this protest, the words of Vedanta Sutra 115 say, no, that is not true. The Vedic scriptures do not say that the Pradhan is the ultimate cause of the material world. Fearing that someone might say, where do the scriptures say that Pradhan is not the creator of the material world? Vedanta Sutra 115 says, Ikshate, because it is said that the Supreme glanced on the material energy. Because Iksha, I think, means to see, right? Mm-hmm. To glass.
To be seen.
Huh?
To be seen.
Seen.
Yeah, seen.
Okay.
To be seen.
To be seen. The word ikshate here describes the activity of seeing performed by the Supreme. When the Upanishads say the creator of the world glanced, tad aikshata, on the material energy, these words cannot describe the inanimate, unconscious Pradhan, which does not have power to see anything. Right? So when you say it is seen, it can't be the Pradhan, because the Pradhan is dead matter, it can't see. Right? Especially in the state of Pradhan. Right, there's only in Mahat, then they're separated. Right? That creator of the material has the power to see is confirmed in these words of Aitreya Upanishad 111. Sa aikshata lokan nu shrija. With a glance, he created the material worlds. In Aitreya Upanishad 112, it is also said, Sa imam lokan astrijata. By glancing, he created the material world. Because he created everything with a glance, and because he thus sees everything that was created, the Supreme is all-knowing. This is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 111 by the word abhigya. So, because we have to remember also is that this is the fifth verse, right? So 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th. So 7 verses, they're one, how do you say, Adhikarana. So there's going to be a progression here. Well, up to this point, the first four, each sutra was its own Adhikarana, so it was complete in itself. So this is giving some aspect that will then be built on by the others. So? Here someone may protest. The scriptures say, so many Protestants. Yeah. The scriptures say that the Lord is ekam ekad dvitiyam, one without a second. This must mean that, because he is everything, the Lord can be so. The Lord cannot be so limited as to have the power to see. And because he cannot see anything, he cannot possibly be all-knowing. Right? So if he's one without a second, that means he's everything. So how can he see? Because seeing means it's a, you could say it's a designated aspect of the Lord and his potency. But if we're saying he just has that unlimited, you know, expanse, then where is the question of there being some specific thing where he can see? Right? So it can't be describing him, so therefore he cannot be the all-knowing. But then it's not going to work much better to try to prove that dead matter is all-seeing and all-knowing when it's also not even conscious. But, you know, as we said, the intelligence, you know, stops working at a particular point and we go, oh, that's nice, you know. By speaking the word Svarat, he is independent. Srimad Bhagavatam 111 refutes this objection. This means that the Supreme can do anything he wishes. In the Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.8, it is said, he does not possess bodily form like that of an ordinary living entity. There is no difference between his body and his soul. He is absolute. All his senses are transcendental. Any one of his senses can perform the action of any other sense. Therefore, no one is greater than him or equal to him. His potencies are multifarious, and thus his deeds are automatically performed as a natural sequence. Because for us, it's that we have the idea, maybe we can do, maybe we can't, because we're not the body, and so therefore we're dependent upon the modes of nature, which then are controlled by Maya, which is then controlled by Krishna. And so it's not a natural sequence. We consider it natural. Like when things go the way we want, we say, now it's, you know, I'm feeling very natural, everything's happening. But the actual point is for Krishna, because he is, you know, he's non-different. So him, his energies, his form, is that they're all non-different. So whatever he desires, it just happens as a natural sequence. That's the difference. That's what we're trying to get to. But the point is it won't work because we're not that. Now, because it's a natural sequence for him, if we bring our activities in line with his, then we're functioning within the natural sequence. Therefore, so many wonderful things can be done. Well, if we try to do it on our own, then less wonderful. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, we say here birth reference in the beginning of each sutra.
Yes.
It means this is based primarily on that verse because it's 14.111.
It's probably it gives a full explanation of that, but in 111, they're bringing out that the point that it's because 111 is going to be the basis of the Bhagavatam, all the technical points. In other words, 111 is going to be the position of the Supreme Lord. It's going to be the Sambandhagyan, right? That verse 2 will be the Abhideya, right? We're only interested in pure devotion. Anything else, Bhagavatam is not interested in, right? And then the third point is going to be about goal. So therefore, trying to please the Lord in devotion, that's actually the goal, not something else. In this way, it is seen that the Supreme Lord has a form, and that form has the power to see. The Lord also has the power to breathe, as will be shown later, text 102 in this book. Paramatma Sandarbha 105, 91-99. Okay. Now an alternative... okay. So, in other words, he has that potency. It's natural. He has all these things, so he has a form. and all, even though he's unlimited, because they're putting, how can you have a form and be unlimited? That's the point. He's the Supreme. He can do that. That's his nature. He is a person. At the same time, he is unlimited Brahman. He is inside everything, in between everything. At the same time, he's separate from everything. Right? That's the nature. Otherwise, we're taking it, no, it has to be logical, but then that's what we're saying intelligence. No, but he's beyond all this. So there is no problem. Right? That makes sense? Because when you get into the personal, that's when you can put things together that don't make sense. Right? If we're just looking at it logically, then we may find that there's a problem. Right? Does that make sense? So on the Brahman platform, then we may say this makes sense, it doesn't make sense. But even Brahman has his energies. Right? So Brahman's unlimited, that means the energies are unlimited. So the manifestations from Brahman can be unlimited. Okay. Now an alternative interpretation of Vedanta Sutra 115 will be discussed. Here Sona may protest. In Katha Upanishad 1.3.15, it is said, "The Supreme is aloof from all sound and touch. He has no form. He is eternal and unchanging. If this is so, how can the Supreme be the author of the Vedas?" To this protest, the following reply is given. It is not true that the Supreme is aloof from all sound and other objects of sense perception. For example, in Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3, it is said, "Then the Supreme glanced at the material energy. He thought, 'Let me become many. I will father many children.'" Here it is said that the Supreme can see, so it is not unreasonable to assume that he can also hear. Therefore, he is not aloof from sound and other objects of sense perception. So in other words, if the one Upanishad verse is saying one and the other is saying opposite, that means there must be a position in which both are true. So that means when you're talking about he doesn't do, or he's not, he can't see, he doesn't see, that's on the material platform. But he does on the spiritual. That makes both sets of verses work. But if you say, no, it's material, means nothing at all. You know, there is no distinction here. Then it makes neither of them work. Because otherwise, then how is it happening? Where did all this come from? Because otherwise, if everything is expanding from Brahman, Brahman can't see or hear, why are we seeing and hearing here? Where did that come from? Right?
The chunk.
The chunk. The chunk, yes, the chunk. The chunk.
They say that it's anyway low, so that they're actually not seeing.
Yes, but then why are you wasting all your time discussing it? And why are you so happy to be seen by others? You know, why are you so happy to hear Namo Narayan? You understand? So that's the point, is then they're totally in Maya, so why we should listen to them? They're just as in Maya as everybody else, so why listen to them? So, this is explained by the word abhigya. Stop here.
It must really suck to have to follow the Vedas and not know the ultimate conclusion.
Yes. Well, that's why he says it's dry.
Yeah.
For the smartest, the impersonal, so life is very dry.
Because yeah. If you don't have the, I don't like the part that I have to follow the Vedas, but I like the part that it gives you taste for Krishna.
Yes.
But the thing is, if you have to follow the Vedas and not get any taste, that's really, really hard.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.